Hi everyone, it's Eli. You know how sometimes you stumble upon something truly game-changing in healthcare? Well, I found it. Kinetisense. This cutting-edge motion capture technology is transforming movement, assessment, and recovery. Imagine getting instant AI-driven insights without any wearables on your patient. That's right, no ping pong balls needed. Just pure, accurate data. Perfect for boosting athletic performance, pinpointing imbalances, and refining rehab. Top professionals worldwide trust Kinetisense to maximize productivity and results. Check out our partner page to learn more. Experience the revolution in movement. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More, the podcast that gives you a viewpoint in sports medicine that can't be found anywhere else. I'm your host, Eli Halleck, and we have a fantastic show ahead of us today. So let's get started. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More. We have got a fun podcast today. I'm really excited. We've got some great people on the show, and I've really been looking forward to this one because it's taken a while to develop. We've been sitting here back and forth with our co-host, Tiff Hobb, for quite some time, who was great back on the podcast a couple months ago. Thanks for coming in and co-hosting today, Tiff. Great to see you again.
Absolutely. Eli, thank you for the invitation. I'm excited for today's episode.
Oh, yeah. No, this is going to be fun. Now, today, we're going back to the equine therapy, rehab, treatment of the human side of the sports, but we're looking at two different aspects. So this is going to be the fun part. We have with us two experts in the field, and that's exactly why, as everybody knows, I invited Tiff, because boy, she's an expert, not me. I like horses. I love horses. I ride horse when I'm camping somewhere, but outside of that, I don't know much. So I'll be the first one to admit it. However, today we are joined by first Jennifer Mitchell of Atlantic Physical Therapy, who is a physical therapist that specializes in treatment in the sport of equine dressage. Did I get that right, Jen? Help me out here, please.
Hey there. Yeah, no, thanks for having me on. So yes, so I am a physical therapist and I specialize in treating equestrian athletes. Well, we can leave it at that because I do see not only dressage riders, but I treat all the Olympic disciplines of riders, meaning show jumping, eventing, and dressage riders.
Fantastic. So. And we're going to come back to that Olympic part because I was reading about it. That's pretty darn cool. I think we all dream about helping out a little bit there. So that's way neat. And our second guest today, Jenna Godding, an athletic trainer from Premier Physical Therapy and Sports Performance, who is also athletic trainer in charge of jockey rehabilitation and treatment of Delaware Park. How you doing, Jenna?
Thanks for having me on today.
Did I get all that right? Please help me out and fix it if I did it wrong.
Yes. Yes, you did. I'll make the addition that I'm also a full-time high school athletic trainer on top of managing our contract for Delaware Park to help with the jockeys on race days.
So what you're saying is you don't have enough to do.
Never.
Yeah.
always busy.
We're really good at biting off more than we can chew, but we work it out sooner or later, don't we?
Yes.
All right. Well, welcome, Jenna. Welcome, Jennifer. And Tiff, welcome back. So great to have you. Let's get into this. So we're going to start off just real brief kind of synopsis. Jen, if you can tell us kind of how you got to where you are now, that would be a great starting point for us.
So I've been a physical therapist for about 30 years, working in outpatient sports medicine and orthopedics. And I've been a rider. I've been riding horses since I was 8. So I've been a rider longer than I've been a physical therapist. We'll just leave it at that. And developing as a physical therapist, I was very fortunate to be able to work a lot with biomechanical analysis of runners and cyclists, overhead athletes, baseball pitchers, tennis players, volleyball players, and doing a lot of movement analysis as I was developing as a therapist, and as a rider, became very interested in how the horse moved, obviously, and then started to think about how the rider had to interact with that horse, and how efficient that could be or how not efficient it could be. And so that has kind of transpired over the last, probably the last 15 years, in helping to develop and using certain protocols and certain metrics and looking at riders in the tack, out of the tack, to help them to be more efficient and to perform better in the saddle. And that's kind of, you know, how I got from point A to point B and integrated my love for riding with my physical therapy practice.
And it's so funny how many of us end up starting in something we love to do in a sport of some sort, whether it's with horses, on a track, on a field, on a court, and also love healthcare and just kind of find a way to mesh them together. It's so fun. Exactly.
Yep.
And Jenna, how did you evolve into the position and where you're at now with Delaware Track and Hodgson High School?
When I started here at Hodgson, Premier Physical Therapy did have the contract to help out Delaware Park, and I had a great mentor, Mandy Minutola, which I think you guys mentioned on the last episode. And once she kind of transitioned out and did move positions, she asked me to take over for her. At that point, I had been helping out at Delaware Park, covering some race days here and there, and I always loved it. I did ride when I was younger, just jumps, and just took some lessons and stuff, and I always loved being around horses. So when she offered me to help out and kind of take over for her when she left, I jumped at it. And it always keeps me busy, especially with full time at the high school along with that. But it's a great addition, a great second setting to have. It's such an interesting setting compared to usual football, soccer, lacrosses that are heavy in this area. So definitely a really cool second setting to be a part of.
Always fun to find those niches, however you want to pronounce it, that spark your interest and you get to evolve into and love when you're in the healthcare. So I saw Tiff shaking her head when Jenna was mentioning a colleague. So Tiff, your experience obviously is very similar, but a little bit different. So if you want to just elaborate a little bit about what you do and how you do it in case our listeners don't remember.
Yeah, I actually I'm the director of Norton Sports Health with Norton Healthcare in Louisville, Kentucky. And we also, like Premier with Jenna, have a partnership at a racetrack called Churchill Downs, a world-renowned Churchill Downs. Absolutely love working with the jockeys there. Have worked as an athletic trainer and supported that partnership for the last 3 years. So through that partnership, I actually came into contact with a couple other providers, healthcare providers across the nation, one of them being Mandy that Jenna referred to previously. So we invited Mandy down to our sports medicine symposium 2 years ago to be a guest presenter in one of our sessions where we solely spoke about treating the equestrian rider, which was really, really great to have her on in Louisville and presenting for us and speaking on her experiences, just treating those jockeys and networking and getting to know her. I did have a question for you, Jenna. With Mandy, you mentioned that she was able to train you and prepare you into transition to treating the jockeys. What information did she share with you, or were you able to go to work with her for a couple of days in shadow prior to that transition, or what did that look like?
So I had been covering race days for about a year and a half before she did transition and leave the company. I had a lot of days and times to talk with her, a lot of new transitioning with the HeadCheck EMR system. She had a lot to do with developing that, and it has since continued to develop since then. She's a wealth of knowledge. Still text her every now and again, and she still covers some race days for me. So just a great mentor overall.
Now, Jennifer, I had a question for you. Reading through the bio, going through some information, and again, as a equine novice, we'll keep it at that. That's being kind on my knowledge. I was really intrigued by dressage Very intriguing, very interesting. The whole goal is to make it look effortless. And biomechanically, I mean, looking at the horse, you said right off the bat, I'm like, oh, yeah, you got to look there. And then looking at the jockey, how the heck do you do it? I mean, that's got to be, you're not just looking at one person. And excuse me, I said jockey, not the jockey, the rider. There we go. Novice right here. First one to admit it. So how do you go about analyzing both the horse and the human, the rider, to make sure that they are in unison? And how do you help prepare that rider?
Yeah, so there are definitely certain norms for movement. When we look at a rider, especially a dressage rider, we know that their base of support is their seat. They're sitting on their butt bones. So the rider basically has to be very, very good at absorbing ground reaction forces of the horse, right? It's all about physics and the absorption of those forces. So, you know, the force absorption starts in the hips and the pelvis and then works its way down the leg, but then also has to go up through the spine, and that spine has to act as a spring. So, you know, when you're analyzing a rider, you're looking for certain degrees of movement of the hip, of the pelvis, of the ankle, and then certain degrees of movement of the spine. And then what we can do is take a look at it, see how that rider is interacting with the horse and how the rider's body is responding to the movement of the horse, and then take them off the horse and do an analysis on the table and see if they do have those specific metrics of hip rotation or hip stability or pelvic movement, pelvic dissociation, meaning does one side of the pelvis move equal to the other, spinal rotation, spinal movement. So we can take a look at those things. And, you know, riding is a very much a sport of symmetry. So we want the right side of the human body to equal the left side of the human body so that when the rider utilizes their aids to ask for certain movements in dressage, that it's symmetric from side to side. It is interesting to be able to be ringside and watching these combinations, these horse and rider combinations, because most people are watching the horse and I'm watching the rider. You know, most people are looking at the horse and are they stepping under and are they crossing in the front? And I'm seeing, well, I can see that this rider is locked up in one hip and they're not as activated in this hip. And this one's turned out and they're dropping a shoulder, and that's going to influence how their horse performs, especially in the dressage arena.
You mentioned watching the rider. You got to watch them in Paris this past summer, as you mentioned briefly, but I got to give a tip of the hat to that. You were part of the U.S. equestrian team on the medical side, taking care of the riders. And congratulations on that feather in the cap. How exciting that must have been.
Yeah, what a great experience to be over there in Paris to support these athletes. And not only, you know, supporting the riders, but I'm supporting the grooms, you know, the people that take care of the horses, and all the other team members. You know, we have a group of farriers and grooms that take care of these horses, and veterinary staff. We have owners that own and support these horses as well. So not only am I taking care of the riders pre-competition and post-competition, but taking care of everybody else as well, making sure that everybody is able to perform best they can. But yeah, what an experience it was.
And there were some medals won.
Yes, our show jumping team managed to win team silver, which was fantastic. Yeah, great thing to be able to celebrate.
Just a little jealous, actually a lot jealous. That's so
That's
cool.
An experience of a lifetime for sure.
Absolutely. I'm so grateful for the opportunity to work with these athletes at the elite level. You know, when I you know, think about my 16-year-old self and you know, my own dreams of being able to go to the Olympics one day, and you know, being able to have a career in physical therapy and then go to the Olympics as a physical therapist supporting these athletes, it's been amazing.
Jennifer, I know you mentioned that you were a rider well before you went to PT school, mm-hmm. but how did you get from going into PT school and then being involved with the U.S. Equestrian Federation and going to the Olympics?
Yeah. So about 8 years ago, the U.S. Equestrian Federation had implemented a program that had been successful in Great Britain of a physio or physical therapist working directly with the riders. out of the tack and in the tack to facilitate performance. Again, to kind of whittle down these asymmetries, balance them out, and basically give these horses and trainers the best rider that they could work with. So about 8 years ago, US Equestrian implemented this program and had brought over Andy Thomas, who is an amazing, has been an amazing mentor for me, and to learn from him the rider biomechanics and how to facilitate these great amounts of symmetry. So Andy came on and worked for US Equestrian and set up a program to train therapists here in the US. They were asking for physical therapists who had a deep knowledge and experience using manual therapy techniques, but that also had knowledge of riding or wanted to work with riders or were riders themselves. So people that understood the sport. So I was fortunate to be able to go and take part in these trainings. There were 16 of us that were trained in these techniques to be able to work with riders at the elite level. And then I was fortunate enough to be able to be asked back to do additional training with Andy. There were four of us that were asked back about 2 years later. So he's been just instrumental in my development as an equestrian physical therapist. So that's how I got connected with US Equestrian. And when he stepped down as the lead physio for the Olympic disciplines, he made the recommendation for me to step up to take his place. So that's kind of been my connection to US Equestrian for the last 8 years. And I've been working directly with the elite programs for the last 3 years, I believe. So.
Well, you must have been doing a great job if they continue to ask you back.
I hope so.
That's very nice when a colleague can look at you and say, "That's my replacement right there."
Yeah, big compliment.
That is a huge compliment and says a lot about you. So congratulations. Jenna, full-time at the high school, but you work with Delaware Park. That's got to be one heck of a gear shift when you go from first to sixth, as far as, if we're talking the old manual transmission. How do you transition that mindset from a traditional high school setting of taking care of athletes to being at the track and taking care of, well, let's face it, one thing I definitely learned talking last time about jockeys, God, they're tough, God, they're strong, and they are damn physical. How do you shift from, I'm not saying high school student athletes are not, and trust me, I'm going to hear from my students for saying that, but would love to know, how do you transition mentally dealing with such an elite athlete?
Yeah, it takes a lot. There are some days that I do leave Saturday morning football practice and go straight over to the track to cover race days, just because there's nobody else that can help me cover. I love it though. Always busy, always moving. It does take a lot of switching the brain. Definitely a lot of communication. I think you guys said in your last episode that Tiff was talking about that they go from track to track. If they get injured, I might not see them again for a month. So it's definitely a lot of transition. The new EMR system, semi-new EMR system that we're using, HeadCheck, has helped out a ton since I've been there. Most of the tracks up and down the East Coast have started to use it because of the governing body HISA has now mandated it. So if it's a HISA track, they do use HeadCheck now. So it's a lot easier to keep track of athletes, but they are have a whole different mindset from my high school kids. They don't want to stop riding. So it's all about keeping track of them, keeping them safe. It's tough communication when there's nobody else, can't really call their parents. They're responsible for themselves. They're professional athletes, they're adults. But it definitely takes everybody to help me out.
I know in the last episode we had talked multiple times. I'd never thought about it, and it struck me as, oh my God, never. Yeah, some of the most needed help is actually at the gate. If something happens at the gate, and I had never thought that. The transition for you from, say, football practice to a gate situation where you have this wonderful, huge animal potentially injuring that jockey, not too different than a football injury, but oh so different because of all the different injuries that can occur. How do you prep for that as you're driving over or, you know, setting up during that transitionary point?
So it is a little bit different. We do have EMS that follows every race on the track. So if the jockey or horse does go down, we have an equine ambulance and EMS immediately. If they need to be transported, EMS transports them, communicates with me so we can upload it to head check so everybody is aware of what's going on. If they are cleared by EMS, they do still have to come back up to me to get cleared fully. Delaware Park has been great. They've put me as the athletic trainer or whoever's covering that day on the EAP. So then we just have to report back to the stewards whether the jockey is clear or not. They also implemented, say, if they race in the first race, they go down, and then they're scheduled to race in the second race. They are immediately taken out of the second race. So we have plenty of time to evaluate whether it's me or EMS. So there's not a rush of 20 minutes to get this jockey back on the horse or not. So it's definitely a lot of people working together, but we have a great EMS team. Luckily, we have a great trauma center right near the track. It's a very quick response team.
Jennifer, what does a competition day look like for you with the USF? I know Jenna just kind of described that emergency response or a little bit of that on track from a medical perspective, but what does that look like for you, Jennifer?
Competition day at like an international event starts pretty early, usually starts anywhere between 4:30 and 5 o'clock in the morning for me to get up and get ready, because very frequently I'm working with athletes by 5:30, 5:45 in the morning to get them prepared for their competition day. And that may mean that I'm helping them to warm up, or I'm using some manual therapy techniques to help them to loosen up. You know, sometimes it's pain relief. If we need to do some dry needling on that day to get them prepared, we do that. But there's very definitively early mornings to get them kind of started. And then sometimes that's at the venue and sometimes that's at the hotel. And then heading off to the venue, checking in with grooms and checking in with veterinary staff to make sure that they are good if they have any needs that I need to help them with immediately or sometime that day to get them to be able to perform their best to help the horses. Usually about an hour and a half before a rider rides, I will see them to be sure that they are as symmetric and as activated as they can be. So doing a quick assessment, I mean, these athletes, I know these athletes, I've worked with them extensively. So it's usually a quick 10, 15 minutes to either loosen something up or activate something to get them moving in the right direction, to get them kind of switched on, is what we say, and then sending them off to get into their warm up. Depending on the type of competition it is, whether if it's a show jumping competition, that rider may have several horses that they're riding that day. If it's eventing, that may be the situation as well. So checking in with these riders in between rides to see if they have any need immediately. You know, if something has happened and they're feeling something that we need to address immediately. If they're in competition and, you know, they have multiple horses, say they're on cross country that day and they've come off and been cleared by EMS, I will get my hands on them and clear them to be able to either continue in competition or not continue in competition. And the day usually kind of goes on like that until anywhere between, you know, 7 and 10 or 11 o'clock at night. So competition days can be pretty long and grueling, but pretty gratifying.
And how many days in a row is a competition, or how many competitions a year are you at?
Depending on the type of competition, the eventers are running their three-day competition. So dressage is one day, cross country the next, and then show jumping. And for the five-star event, sometimes it's a two-day dressage. So the competition may go 4 days. You know, for show jumping, we may be in competition for 3 to 5 days. Dressage is usually they're doing a Grand Prix and either a Grand Prix special or a freestyle. So that's, you know, one day and then usually an off day, and then they compete again. It depends, you know, if you're talking about a, you know, like an Olympic Games, you know, I was there for 2 weeks. We would have one discipline come in and compete. and then another discipline would come in and compete. So there was really not a whole lot of overlap with the competition. So with something like the Olympics or the Pan American Games, it's something that goes on for it's a couple of weeks. We have veterinarians for each Olympic discipline. We have a vet for the show jumpers. We have a vet for dressage. We have a vet for eventing. I'm the physio, and I cover all of the disciplines. So I'm there from start to finish.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, what does your medical support team look like when you're on the road? And what items do you take with you when you're on the road and treating these athletes?
Yeah, so we do have a team physician who is with us at international events or at FEI events. And I will turn to him in instances where I feel like I need more medical support. You know, all of the facilities that we're at, all the competition venues, we are notified of what external medical support would look like and how we need to access that. But when I'm traveling with the team, I've got my treatment table and my arsenal of, kinesio tape and needles and TheraBands and Graston tools and, all of those little things. My kit literally fits in one suitcase, a small suitcase. My Normatec compression boots, I usually don't leave those at home. I usually bring those with me. For the most part, I'm using my hands. I'm a manual therapist. You know, I do a lot of more osteopathic style treatments for these riders. I feel like they tend to respond best to those in competition. If we're out of competition, we need to do more corrective work. I can get a little bit more aggressive, but those are the techniques that I tend to use most. So as long as I have my table and my hands, I'm pretty good to go.
Spoken like a true pro.
Right.
There you go. Exactly. We work with manual therapists out here in California. And I tell you what, I learn more. He's a wonderful guy, former athletic trainer, Eric Lanswick. Eric, if you're listening to this one, thanks for all the years of support, buddy. He went back, got his master's in PT, and I learned more on the sidelines with him talking. We call him Yoda. I'm a Star Wars geek, so we call him Yoda. And it's a term of endearment and respect, because I learned more in those 3 hours every Friday night just talking to him on how to take care of our athletes and treat our athletes and rehab our athletes than I do at any Con Ed course ever. And fortunately, I've been working with him now for 27 years, and I love manual therapy. It's so fantastic.
Yeah.
Anyway, off my soapbox, sorry. Elevate your knowledge, ignite your curiosity, and compete with the best minds at events hosted by the American Academic Competition Institute. AACI's sports medicine competitions feature practical exercises, challenging quizzes, specialty tests, and keynote speakers that foster knowledge and social engagement in healthcare and sports medicine. Go to AACITest.org for more information on upcoming regional and national competitions. Sign up for the Ultimate Intellectual Showdown. Jenna, are you, because of your position with the Delaware Park, are you able to get into the rehab component with the jockeys, or are you more of the emergency medical athletic trainer taking care of injuries on site? And how do you get to play your role or adjust your part a little bit depending on the need?
We don't do a ton of rehab just because we're not there every day. We're only contracted on race days. I wish there could be somebody there every day.
So are we listening to that out there? She would like to be there more. Just saying, just remember this. Okay, we've got that, and that's going to be posted. All right.
I wish there could be somebody there every day. I wish she had more time with the jockeys, but we're only contracted to be there on race days. So I don't do a ton of manual therapy or taping or cupping or anything like that on race days. I have done some. We also have a great massage therapist on staff who's there every day. So most of the guys go to him before races if they're feeling a little stiff. The guys, they definitely have gotten a lot more comfortable. They'll come up if something's bothering them just to get advice. If one of them gets injured, getting them into PT, since I can't see them every day, just kind of getting doctor referrals and PT referrals as I can to help them out when I'm not there.
It's good that they can rely on you as a resource on those days when you're not there. They can go to the resources that you are well, pushing them towards, which is good. That's our goal. If we can't take care of something in healthcare, we send them to the people that can. That's always our goal, is just to, well, take care of the patient. That's all we do. That's what we love. It's why we work, as Jennifer says, from 5 in the morning till 7 at night sometimes, right? Or Jenna, that's most Fridays, I suspect, during football season and possibly lacrosse season.
Yes.
Ah, yeah. Again, premier physical therapy, sports performance. Don't forget, Jenna wouldn't mind doing a little more time at the track. Just throwing that out there one more time, maybe a third time later in the program too. Jennifer Mitchell, I'm really enthralled by manual therapy. I love it. I think we don't do enough of it in our profession, especially at the high school setting. Part of the problem is time.
Yeah.
What, in your personal opinion, professional, not personal, professional opinion, are some of the tools in manual therapy that would be more helpful when you have a small amount of time for a clinician to work with a patient?
Yeah, so I mean, in my office, so I work in my clinic. I have a orthopedic and sports medicine clinic up here in the Northeast, and I work 40 hours in that clinic, and then I'm off treating riders kind of in my free time. So in that
Your
free time,
off time, your free time off time. Yep.
my off time. So in that off time, when I'm working with riders, there really isn't a lot of time, and you are very pressed. So you know, you kind of find certain techniques that work best with certain riders. I do use a lot of strain counter strain. I use a lot of active release. If I need to get in and I have some time, a lot of times in competition, I'll be able to check in with these athletes, you know, 2, 3, 4 days ahead of time. And if we have something that we really need to get to very quickly, then I'll do dry needling with that. You know, if we need to do some spinal manipulation, we can do that too. I tend to go to those techniques the most. I do some myofascial work as well. The techniques that I tend to use, I would call them a little bit more integrative. Like I'll use some strain counter strain with some myofascial, or use some active release with some myofascial. So I wouldn't say it's like strictly one thing or the other. It's definitely very integrated.
So I have to be honest, I'm geeking out here because you talked about three of my favorite manual techniques. I love strain counter strain, active release, and MFR. And I've got to give a little shout out to a mentor who, if she's listening, I'll be stunned, but at the same time, I would really appreciate it. Toby Rosen originally, then Montour, PT, who we kind of grew up clinically in the clinic, and she introduced me to manual therapy and strain counter strain way back when I just got out of athletic training school, thought I was going PT, working in the clinic. And I'm like, what's this voodoo? And I got to be honest, I love that voodoo. I
Yeah.
mean, strain counter strain opened my eyes. I'm sitting there going, oh my God. And we use techniques every day in our clinic. All three of us are constantly using some type of manual therapy. I love it. So I'm sorry, geeking out. I'll get off the soapbox again. That's twice. I'm sorry. Tiff, if you got a question, I'm going to shut up and let you go.
Well, Jennifer, do you see trending issues with your riders? Is there one or two things that typically pop up over and over?
You know, my job with any rider is to address any maintenance issues that they may have. It's also to address them from a performance standpoint. So, I mean, maintenance issues, a lot of riders will have issues with hips or back or spine. See a lot of those. Or, you know, maybe they've come off and they have an old shoulder injury. They've got a clavicle fracture that we need to deal with, ankle fractures that we need to deal with. From a performance perspective, we do tend to focus in on a lot of hip and pelvic mobility and stability, that dynamic fluid motion and control. That's kind of where we will start to make sure that we have that symmetry of motion side to side in the hip and the pelvis, and then moving up through the spine, and then going down the leg to make sure that the knee is adequate, the ankle has good spring motion for that shock absorption as well. But I would say that the majority of issues that we see either here in my clinic treating riders on an ongoing basis, or even as a from a performance perspective, we're changing things at the hip and the pelvis to normalize those movement patterns to give them access to be able to perform the best that they can.
Now, I think you might have answered this in some of the things that you just mentioned, and I know you also mentioned your pre-show assessment. Can you walk us through what that looks like, an assessment, maybe during competition, or what an assessment looks like in the clinic for your riders?
Yeah, if we're in competition, I'm typically ringside watching these riders and not really saying a whole lot. I'm maybe standing next to the trainer and listening into what the trainer is telling these riders if they're having an issue with, for a dressage rider, if they're having an issue particularly with a flying change or with lateral work in one direction or the other. That difficulty can be, it can be in the horse, it can be a stiffness in the horse, it can be in the rider. So I'm typically ringside with the veterinary crew, along with the equine physio, the equine massage therapist, trying to sort out these issues, because sometimes the vet and the equine physio will come to me and say, geez, this horse is always tight on the left side of their back. Every single time I release it, we work on it, and then the rider gets on, and then the next day the tightness is back. So is that an equine issue or is that a rider issue? From my perspective, that's a rider issue. That's the rider somehow tension causing that tension in through the horse. Assessing ringside and seeing how the rider is interacting with the horse, how the rider is moving with the horse or not moving with the horse, as the case may be. But getting the input from the vet staff and from the equine physio, as well as from the trainer, any difficulties in the training, that's typically my mounted assessment of the rider and the horse and rider interaction. And then, of course, based on that, maybe a little bit later after they've taken care of the horse, addressing that with the rider and saying, hey, I noticed a couple of things, in your schooling session today. Do you mind if we take a look? You don't want to go at them and say, geez, I think you're really locked up on this side. Can we do something about it? It just kind of going in and, I don't want to change them as a rider, because these riders have, they've done so much to get to this point, and they've obviously been doing something correct if they're already at the elite level. But my job is to not necessarily change them as a rider, but just to facilitate them and make them the best rider that they can be through facilitating, making sure that they have those movement patterns and that there's symmetry in those movement patterns so that they can have the most effective aids when they're asking their horse to do specific things.
Well, and I can imagine, especially on competition day, that can be a delicate balance
Yeah.
to make even minute changes, right
Yeah.
before going into the ring.
Yeah, and that's why we do a fair amount of work pre-competition and in training sessions. So I really prefer, and especially, this year is what we call an off year. We're in a non-Olympic, non-world championship year this year with US Equestrian. So the goal is to really work with these athletes out of competition to do training sessions, to be able to try different things in training sessions, because it's not the time in competition to be trying new things. You want to kind of stay with what you know and stay with what has worked for them. I'm fortunate that I've built a rapport with most of these athletes over the last 3 years and working at the elite level, so that they know what I can offer them and I know what I can, where I can push and where I shouldn't push.
Absolutely. And you mentioned kind of building that trust over time and in that evaluation so that you can identify where to push or not push or make those changes outside of competition day. Jenna, how do you evaluate knowing that your jockeys are so transient and building that relationship to kind of have that similar evaluation as Jennifer mentioned to know when to push or not push or how to speak to them on competition day or in between races if there's only 20 minutes until maybe they race again?
It definitely takes time, especially with I think jockeys who just want to go. If they don't race, they don't get paid. And I know they want to race so bad. It just takes time to build the relationship. I think they're used to my face and a couple of the per diem athletic trainers that I have helped staff race days. I think they're all used to our faces now, are willing to come up to us if something's bothering them. And are willing to talk to us in between races, especially when I do have to do a full evaluation. They're definitely more willing to talk to us. But yeah, just takes a ton of time and a ton of trust.
I'm going to presume in the beginning, when you first started out, Jenna, it was a little more difficult, almost like working in the traditional setting, getting those athletes to trust you and believe in you. But on top of that, as you said, and this was a surprise to me when we interviewed Tiff way back when, they only get paid if they race. So if you're taking time away from them racing, they're losing whatever financial resources and income. So they really need to trust you. How did you get them there in the beginning?
It's all about introducing yourselves, trying not to hide upstairs in the top of the jockey's quarters. It really, the new EMR system really helps with that, since they rotate to different tracks so often. Being able to contact other tracks, if I know they're racing somewhere else the next day, I just wanted to contact the track that you're going to tomorrow, just to let them know what's going on, just so they can take another look at you tomorrow, since I might not see you tomorrow, just so they know that we have their best interests at heart and that we want them to race. Obviously, we don't want them to sit.
You're letting them know you care.
Yeah.
My students might be stunned if they thought I cared. They know I do, but they always wonder.
Eli, I'm sure they know you do.
I don't know. There are a few that wonder, well, maybe, but you know,
tough
that's
love
how it
is still love, Eli.
Well, then I must love the hell out of most of them if that's the case. Oh, my goodness. You know what? It's so true. You, no matter what setting we're in, we've got to build that rapport because, I mean, you only get in healthcare because you're called to do it, and you want to help others, and you want to give of yourself. And that's all we do is give. Jen said it, 5:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. Lord knows that's what we see during football if we're lucky. Right, Jenna?
Yes.
So we give, 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 so others can do. And it's, in a weird way to us, and I can't figure it out, it's rewarding. It really is. Even Tiff's going,
yeah,
darn right. It is. I have a question about that EMR, Jenna. You're saying it, and I remember Tiff talking about it last time. Are you able to tap into some of the medical history from previous either races or seasons on that patient? I presume so, but I don't want to assume, and get a better understanding of what's going on with that patient as you're either evaluating, treating him, referring him out, all of that.
Yeah. So you can, if they have a pretty lengthy history, or if they've been on entered in head check, racing at head check tracks for a while, you'll have a pretty lengthy history with them. Especially, they have to have physicals and baselines updated yearly. So you can look back at previous physicals, you can look back at previous baselines if they're uploaded, and you can also see all their previous injuries. We try, even if there is an accident, even if they're not injured, we do put that in there just to say that there was an incident. They can still obviously be eligible to ride, but you have that whole history to look back on of previous injuries, previous baselines, previous history of concussions, anything like that. So yeah, you can see, as long as they're racing at other tracks that use head check, you can see previous medical history.
And I think we both agree that jockey healthcare has evolved and has been elevated over the last couple of years, recently through long-term efforts. That head check EMR system has definitely contributed, as I know you've mentioned a couple of times, and I completely agree with you. Jennifer, is there an EMR system for the riders that you treat through USEF? Or how do you create that continuity of care for those riders?
There is through the USOPC. For riders who kind of fall under that, if they have qualified to compete at that level, we do have a standardized EMR system that we are able to upload things for the continuity of care. With US Equestrian, I'm really the provider of the physical therapy services. We do have one other physical therapist who's contracted as well, and she primarily works with the Paralympic team, with para-equestrians, and does some work with the development programs as well. So we have our own system of keeping our therapies consistent and our treatments consistent through communication and through, it's not an electronic record, but we do have record for those riders as well.
Now, I'm going to presume, and I'm used to being told I'm wrong when I'm wrong. So I'm married, I've got two daughters, so I hear it all the time. Correct me if I'm incorrect. Most of your athletes are not just sitting down. I'm sorry, Jennifer. I didn't say who I was talking to. My bad. There we go. Jennifer. So I presume that most of your athletes aren't just hunkered down in one area throughout the year. So they're a little bit of everywhere throughout the nation. And that's going to make it a little bit difficult for you to follow all their care. How do you make sure that those elite athletes that you're working with are getting the care they need when they're not around you?
Yeah, so it definitely is challenging. In the winter months, a lot of these athletes migrate down south. They're either in South Carolina or in Florida, either on Ocala, Florida, or Wellington, Florida. So I do take many trips down between January and March to check in on my riders and work with them either out of competition or in competition down in Florida. We do that. We always make sure that if they're having issues that they are set up with a local physical therapist that they're working with, and I'm in contact with those therapists to check in for the continuity of care with that. So not that I'm overseeing, but I am checking in to make sure that everything is going well. If they're having any issues, if they're having any compliance issues, which, you know, with these riders at this level, they want to do everything that they can to be the best that they can. So, you know, there's not a lot of compliance issues. That's how I'm checking in. It's a lot of Zoom calls, a lot of phone calls to check in with these riders when I'm not directly in front of them. And it's a lot of Zoom calls and messages and emails to the providers that they're working with to make sure that everything is going according to plan.
And I presume you're doing this on all your free time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All that free time that we have, oh, so much of, and find how to introduce work into that area somehow, some way. We're good at that, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kind of jealous. So you just shoot down to Florida or what was the other place, South Carolina, to make sure there's some continuity of care.
Man, yeah.
I need to do that.
Usually it's four, and it's, I'll fly down. I'm in the Northeast, so I'll fly out of Boston and fly directly into Palm Beach. Usually land around 10 in the morning, and I'm either at the venue or working with a rider by noontime.
Wow.
And working, you know, from noon usually that first day until 6 or 7, and then pretty much going nonstop from 7 in the morning until 6 or 7 at night for 3 or 4 days, and then hop a flight at 8 o'clock on a Sunday night, get into Boston at midnight, and drive home. So.
And then go to work the next morning, right?
Yeah, I got a 7 a.m. patient on Monday. So.
Well, and Jennifer, I think I read that you're a business owner, correct?
Yes. Yes. So Atlantic Physical Therapy, which is here in the Northeast in Maine. Yes, I'm managing partner of this clinic here and have been for the last 20 years.
So how do you balance that with some of this travel, some of these extra items that you spoke about, coverage and these work trips on top of family and also your, you know, equestrian riding? How do you balance it all?
Yeah, it's tough. It's a lot. It's early mornings and some late nights. And I sleep really, really well at night, which is good. So I'm able to get my rest. And you know, I'm fortunate that, you know, my staff, I have two other therapists that work here with me in the office, which is where I am right now, actually was able to bring on another partner to kind of help me out. One of our other therapists, his name is Matt. He is my kind of co-managing partner at this point. So when I'm off and gallivanting, he is here in the office holding down the fort and doing a great job managing it. So,
okay, Jennifer, words of wisdom to newly professional Jennifer out of school. What are your words of wisdom to younger Jennifer?
Yeah, you know, as a physical therapist, and I get this question, I get a lot of PTs that want to work with riders and they do ask that question, you know, what can I do? And you know, the best thing I can do is tell physical therapists to, you know, get your hands on people, treat people and get your hands on them to educate your hands and educate your brain. I think that was, you know, the biggest thing for me as a developing therapist, you know, graduating from PT school. And I was very fortunate to be in a clinic that really valued manual therapy and valued continuing education. So I took full advantage of that full budget and getting that continuing education and being mentored by other therapists who had a lot more experience than me and learning from them. So you just have to kind of be a sponge and just take every opportunity to learn, you know, in the PT clinic. And then even in, you know, I do ride when I get the chance, but taking the opportunity as a rider to even just sit and listen to clinicians work with other riders, again, just being that sponge, I feel like, you know, every situation can be a learning opportunity if you make it a learning opportunity. So just taking advantage of those opportunities and making those opportunities for yourself to be able to put yourself in situations where you are going to learn something.
I love your comment. Be a sponge.
Jenna, I know that you're a newer certified athletic trainer. So what is maybe some advice that was given to you as you entered this workforce, or some advice that you would like to share even a couple years into this profession?
Definitely taking advantage of any CEU programs. Like you said, the symposium, I did have the opportunity to go. Delano Park sent me to the International Jockey Wellness Conference.
I was there.
October. You were? Oh my gosh.
we'll meet up next time.
Yes. So I was able to go to that and learn from it's not my normal setting. So just absorbing everything. Got to meet some really cool retired jockeys that unfortunately did have to retire because of injuries, but just hearing their experiences and networking with other people. There was people there from Scotland, Australia, Ireland, England, just hearing what differences we have compared to across the water there. Just CEUs, as I said, definitely. I know the master's programs now that most athletic training programs have transitioned into have like a full immersion rotation as your last rotation. So if something like anything like jockeys, horse riders, anything like that interests you, see if there's anything in your area that would allow you, if there's any athletic trainers in the area that would allow you to be an intern for a while. Just get your feet wet in different settings and just see where eventually you want to end up.
So we have two analogies dealing with water. Be a sponge and get your feet wet. And I couldn't agree more. That's how you become a better clinician, whether it's the PT clinic, the athletic training clinic, out on the field, out on the track, taking care of any type of patient. Yeah, get your feet wet and be a sponge. I promised you I would not talk too much. And oh my God, this is probably one of my favorite episodes because I didn't. So thank you. You were both, Jennifer, Jenna, you guys were great. This was so enlightening, so educational. And I really do appreciate you taking out some time because we know Jennifer and Jenna absolutely have no time because of everything they do. Being on our show and taking the time to educate our listeners about our respective fields. Tiff, you were fantastic. Thank you for co-hosting. And yeah, you're coming back. So just know that.
Thank you. This was great. And I'm already looking forward to the next co-hosting opportunity. I don't know the topic or the people yet, but Eli, I'm in.
You got that, Gabe. We got it verbal. We're going to get Nick to sign it. We're good to go. But hey, we got to give a little nod or a shout out. We've got a sports medicine symposium coming up soon in the Kentucky area. So
that's right. Thanks for bringing it up.
Of course.
So we have our upcoming 2025 sports medicine symposium. The Friday portion, March 21st of 2025, is a general sports med, hot topics, current updates. But the part that I love to promote the most is that Saturday portion. We do have a couple different labs going on this year, but we are doing a treating the equestrian rider lab. So it's going to be an active lab, a little bit different than the last 2 years where we've had formal presentations specifically on treating the equestrian riders. We're actually going to have an equisizer there from our good friends at Wooden Horse Company, and we'll have a true active lab session from two of our local PTs as well. So I'm really excited for that. You can find more information and register at NortonCME.com, NortonCME.com.
Where was that again?
The website is NortonCME.com, and the symposium will be held at the world-renowned Churchill Downs in Millionaire's Row. March 21st.
Oh, yes. Churchill Downs.
2025.
We've heard of that place once or twice, haven't we?
We sure have. Home of the famous Kentucky Derby. And this year will be the 101st Kentucky Derby. And we're already prepping and we're very excited for it.
Everyone, Jennifer, Jenna, Tiff, thank you so much for being on the show. We appreciate you. I would really like to have all of you back at some point. Keep an eye out for an email from our producer, Gabriel. I learned so much today. I learned that Jenna can survive through a, well, ended up being a real incident on campus. So hopefully everybody else is okay. But I learned so much today. I want to thank you. Thank you for being on Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More. Have a great afternoon and hope you guys have a wonderful weekend. Thank you so much.
Thank you
all.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Want to make sure you hear every episode? Remember to like, follow, and subscribe to our podcast. Don't forget to share our podcast with your colleagues, family, and friends. Your support will help more people find and enjoy our content. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is directed by Eli Halleck. It is produced by Gabriel Halleck. Our theme music is by Coma Studios via Pixabay. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the contributors. Want to know more about us? Visit us at wrapituppodcast.com. That's with one P, wrapituppodcast.com. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is a production of Halleck Consulting, LLC.